It was an interview done with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans on a radio station on a program on Latin American affairs. At the time, Oswald was with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. I got a call from a member of the Federation of Cuban University Students, and they requested some equal time. And, of course, since we are into public service and expressing the viewpoints of all concerned, I was more than happy to give them equal time. So I have with me a member, Tony
Delacova.
Tony Delacova and Juan Pina, who is a former political prisoner who was in prison in Cuba, and he is with the Organization of Ex-Political Prisoners. They are going to read a statement in response to the program of several weeks ago, and then we'll take some calls. I'm anxious to talk to Juan because I'm sure he has some things to tell us about Cuban prisons, which none of us even suspect. So, Tony, if you'd like to make your statement, go right ahead.
In the opening proposition, I wanted to state that what the overwhelming majority of the American people have been led to believe by Fidel Castro's communist propaganda and organizations like the Fair Play for Cuba Committee is that Cuba was a backward and underdeveloped feudal nation owned by gangsters and wealthy landowners before the advent of Castro's revolution. I got the following figures from the United Nations Statistical Yearbook of 1959, proving that Cuba was one of the most advanced nations in Latin America prior to becoming the present Russian colony. In comparison with the rest of Latin America, in 1959, Cuba had the lowest mortality rate of only 5.8%. It had the lowest inflation rate of only 1.4%. Compared with the other nations, Cuba had the highest percent of national income devoted to public education. Also, the highest percent of television sets and broadcast stations in Latin America. In a world comparison, Cuba was the number one cobalt producer. And Cuba also held second place in the world as nickel producer. The Cuban people held third place in Latin America in having the most automobiles, telephones, and newspapers. And a literacy rate also placed Cuba in third place among the other Latin nations. Even though the island was the last Spanish colony to gain independence, in only 56 years it rapidly surpassed 18 other Latin American nations to put itself into third place. Prior to 1959, the Cubans enjoyed a constitution written in 1940 which gave them some of the most advanced social laws in the world. They included the abolishment of the death penalty in 1940 and the Equal Rights Amendment for Cuban women passed in 1950. By 1959, the Cuban people believed that Castro would lead them to be the number one nation in Latin America. But instead, he created a totalitarian militaristic regime and over 1 million Cuban refugees left the island by all means available. As political refugees, our efforts to regain our country have been continuously suppressed by the United States government, which is presently seeking coexistence with Castro's communist regime. Senator George McGovern recently visited Cuba and claimed that Fidel Castro is loved by the majority of the populace. Yet, he failed to comment on why Castro was wearing a bulletproof field jacket and cap in a blazing 90-degree heat. It is ironic that Senator McGovern did not object to riding in Castro's Jeep, which had a machine gun strapped on the dashboard in front of him. McGovern is known to be a gun control advocate. And I cannot believe that the senator felt comfortable with Castro's army of bodyguards swarming about with all those guns out in the open. The senator is also a prison reform advocate and is opposed to the death penalty, yet he did not discuss with the communist dictator the fate of Cuba's political prisoners or of how deserters are sent to the firing squad. Last week, three Havana University students, among them a 19-year-old girl, were executed by firing squad in Cuba because they wrote a letter to visiting Venezuelan students expressing the miserable conditions of life in Cuba. If this is how the communists deal with intellectual opposition, then there is no hope for detente or coexistence. While McGovern loudly condemns the right-wing military government in Chile, he keeps silent when President Pinochet offered humanitarianly to exchange all his communist political prisoners for the political prisoners in Cuba and the Soviet Union. As usual, the communists did not make a deal even to save their own kind. Finally, I wanted to make a last appeal to the younger Cubans who, like myself, came to this country at a very young age and tell them to get involved, learn more about Cuban history, so at least they'll understand what's going on. Our fathers no longer have the agile youth which was to continue the struggle to regain the country we were born in. Even though we have grown up in America, I feel we have a duty to Cuba and to our grandparents who tenaciously fought and gave us Cuban independence. Volveremos.
Okay, I ask you a couple of questions on several points you made. First of all, your comments on pre-Castro Cuba. Can we safely assume that pre-Castro Cuba, despite its production in various fields and its achievements in equal rights and such things as that, obviously pre-Castro Cuba was not a political utopia. I mean, there were a lot of difficulties down there. Am I correct in assuming that, or is that incorrect?
There were no more difficulties than the difficulties that the United States has recently experienced or that any other nations in the country at the time also had.
And you wonder, if Castro was wearing a bulletproof jacket, which I'm sure he was, it could also be the fact that we've recently learned our CIA, or at least some members, ex-members of the CIA, have claimed that they attempted on 15 separate occasions to assassinate Castro, which is not to say that people aren't in Cuba wouldn't also like to do it, but I mean there is ample reason for that happening. Okay, Juan, could we talk to you? Could you get up a little closer here? You were in a Cuban prison, I understand.
In 6 years.
6 years, and when were you released?
I was released in 1967.
And what were you in for?
Well, because the conspiracy against the government.
And
the system.
A conspiracy that you were involved in,
right.
I take it. How did that come about? Were you living in Cuba? Were you born in Cuba?
Yeah, I was born in Cuba in 1976.
And give us some background. I've never actually talked to anyone politically involved at the time of Castro's takeover. What was that scene like? What happened? I mean, from the were you against Castro from the beginning?
Well, actually, no. I was getting involved because the situations of the Communist Party and everything was growing up all over the country, and they were compulsing you to do some kind of things like you got to be a member of the revolution, of you have to be a member of the party in order to get a nice job. You got to get involved with the revolution anyway, otherwise you just be nobody in the country. So they came out with a lot of things that I really don't like it. So I decided myself to get involved with the people and they were trying to get rid of him.
How widespread, how well organized was the resistance against Castro?
Well, not too good at all, because we have now for experience that what really happened, we got a lot of Cubans that they thought that it was the best thing to stay in the country and fight against the communists. But fight is not the Cubans inside against Castro, it's the Cubans against the communists. And the communists got the support of the Soviet Union, which they got since the beginning, because I remember the Soviet Union, the Soviets were the first guy that got over there and organized the political state, the secret police and all those things. So it was really hard for us since the beginning to fight against them. They used the spring from the guy from Guatemala, from Hungary and all those places, and they infiltrated all the organizations just since the beginning. For that reason, we went up to the Americans. We went up to the Americans and tried to get the help and everything we could from the government at the time, from the United States government. At that time was the American Embassy in Cuba, and I can say names even the people that helped us to organize over there. But like I said, we were deeply infiltrated by the communists, and most of the thing, we never could do nothing serious because, I don't know for what reason we anti-communists or democratic people, we are not too agree for the bloodshed, since, you know, every time we're trying to do something against one person, they control us, and for the reason, you can say, in the 15 years, I guess 3 or 4 members of the party, I'm talking about top-ranking member of the party, they just got killed by the forces against Castro, because in all the times, the organizations against Castro, they tried to stop that kind of a work, you know, they're going for the sabotage against factories, but they're not going for the murders and the guys, you know. It's in contrast with the position of Castro. They kill everybody. They just don't care about if you're a farmer or a black guy, or like they say, you know, they're always talking about black guys, the farmers, all those. That's nothing. They just don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. They use people.
I know Eldridge Cleaver spent time in Cuba.
Yeah,
and he did not. He was very disillusioned when he left.
And Williams too.
Yeah.
Williams, one of the guys that was involved in that case in 1954, I guess it was, where they made a movie about it. I was coming for the FBI
mm-hmm.
when they put the 11 member of the United States Communist Party. And he was one of the guys that went over there to Cuba. He passed about 5 years, I guess, in Cuba, Williams. I can't remember his full name now. But he split from Cuba, too. Because when they get over there, they realize then they were communists out of the communist system.
Mm-hmm.
Which it is a big difference, you know. Because it might be some kind of a dream for most of the people when they read the books of the communist philosophy, and they think that's the solution of the problems. But when they get to the reality, you realize that it's impossible because it's utopic, you know. So those people there, especially if they are American, was the American people got the opportunity to buy everything they want and everything, when they get to the reality with the communists, and the first thing they do is cut your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't believe in the things you want, and you got to believe in the things they want to.
What are the Cuban jails like? For instance, what is a daily routine?
Well, in Cuban jails? Since 1960 to 1965 to 1964, it was, I won't say a normal prison, but it was a communist prison. Was the type of, you go to bed at 11 o'clock like in the army, and you get up at 6 o'clock, and during the day you do whatever you want to, you know. They get into the prison sometimes, and I don't know how you call it,
a search.
Search for everybody, and they pick up and search everything you get, and they confiscate everything they had been given permission to you to get it before, you know. And then, that was from 1960 to 1965. It was the kind of a prison that you can more or less live in. And even when 1962, was the October crisis, they set up the TNT in the basement of the sixth of the building on Isle of Pine. And in 1961, when the big invasion, they set up a dynamite. But in 1964, 1965, it was when the prison guard was really, really hard. They start killing everybody over there because they want to impose us to work. At the beginning, they tried to put out the voluntary work, but it won't work, so they went to the force. And they tried to put us to work, whether we like it or not. They started then one morning in 1964, I think it was in May, and they got over there about 7 o'clock in the morning with about 20 trucks. They tried to fill the truck with people to go to the farms and work, and we didn't want it to, so they put about 6 or 7 right in front of the wall in the prison gate, and they shoot it right there.
And you saw that?
Right. Just to give us an example of what they're going to do if we don't work. You know, that's kind of a thing in Stamy Day.
Yeah, right. I would
work.
You
know, something like got you by surprise.
All right, well, and how did you get out?
Well, I was condemned to 6 years, and they give me 20 days after that, and then when I get off...
Well, okay, we're going to go through this one more time. We've had some difficulties. Nothing human, no human errors on this show. I'm going to open the phone lines. The number in Dade County is 944-2964, and the number in Broward County is 581-1580. And if you would like to ask Juan Pena some questions, we have hopefully some answers. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, can I speak to Warren?
Yes, he's here.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I would like to ask you your opinion of what you feel was the truth behind the assassination of President John Kennedy. As I see lately that they're trying to connect John F. Kennedy with saying okay for the assassination of Castro. And I feel that this is propaganda to explain to the American public, because the American public is asking for answers. And I think the propaganda might be that that John F. Kennedy was assassinated by Cubans because President Kennedy intended in assassinating Castro. So I would appreciate your opinion as to what you feel is the truth.
You mean whether or not Castro and or some Cuban faction was responsible, or whether it was somebody in the United States?
That's right.
Well, I don't know. I was on Cuba at that time, and it was in 1963, I guess, and. And they got us by surprise over there. We got the news from the guards in the prison. They were so happy at that time that they were telling us, "Oh, wow, your boss got killed now and everything." But I guess that your question is kind of a real serious question. Got me by surprise to this time again. And if my real opinion is, I don't think the Cubans were misled in that sense.
Right. Do you think that one man, this man Oswald, was responsible for the killing? From what you have read, do you have any feelings on whether this was a conspiracy to assassinate the president, and that more than one gunman was involved?
Sir, I feel I would be a little better to qualify that, since I came to this country in 1961.
Yeah.
And I lived here. Being a Cuban refugee, I also had the mood of the Cuban refugee people at the time that President Kennedy was assassinated.
Right.
There were two main factors implicated within that assassination. One was the fact of Kennedy's blunder during the Bay of Pigs invasion, in which he told the Cubans here in exile that he would back them up 100%. Later on, he changed his mind. Supplies were cut off. The Air Force did not come out and aid them like he said he would, and the invasion was lost. But what got the Cuban refugees very upset was the fact that during the October crisis, when the Russian missiles were in Cuba, John Kennedy made a secret deal with Khrushchev in seven letters, in which he told Khrushchev that if the Russians got the missiles out of Cuba, he would promise them that the Cuban refugees in the United States who had been raiding against Castro would not leave either American soil or any other soil in Latin America to attack Castro. Now, after he promised this, he did not tell that to the Cuban refugees. In December of 1962, he stood up in the Orange Bowl and he told the Cubans that he was behind them 100% and that he would return the brigade's flag in a free Havana.
Did he use Cuba as a scapegoat, or the Cuban refugees as scapegoat?
Yes, that's the way it seems. The Cuban refugees, the emotions were running very high at the time because they felt that Kennedy had betrayed them.
Right.
Which, in fact, he had.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
In other words, this gentleman feels that the Cuban refugees were involved in the assassination.
No. What we're saying, I don't, did we say that? No, I don't think we said that.
Well, I'm saying that, I didn't say that, but I'm saying that all angles are open.
In other words, the possibility was there.
There is also that possibility.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Hello, you're on the air.
Right, let me turn my radio down here because it's over time.
Please do. Right.
I was just noticing in that opening statement there were a couple of discrepancies that if they could be cleared up would make the whole thing fit together more. Like, constitutions, for instance, can be written by rich people. You know, I mean, most people in political power. You were talking about the Constitution written in 1940, can be written by the rich people, not necessarily people in general.
Well, Cuba had basically the same political system that the United States has in representation. I don't believe that you can break it down to rich or poor. Obviously, the listeners don't know that Juan here is black. He's a Cuban black. And if the revolution was made for the black, the poor, the peasants, then why is it that these people have come to the United States? Why is it that the Cuban fishermen, the illiterate fishermen who have everything to gain from the revolution, why do they put their families on boats to come to the United States? So I have to say that you have to study history a little bit more, find out who were the constituents in 1940 who voted for this Cuban Constitution, how these laws were passed, why in Cuba in 1950 women got the Equal Rights Amendment. These weren't rich people that did this, that put it through. It was people from all the political walks of life in Cuba.
Uh-huh. Okay, and I noticed when you were making the comparisons, most of the comparisons were made to other Latin American nations instead of the rest of the world. I saw that Cuba was up high socially as far as Latin American nations went, but, you know, it really didn't give me any outlook on how they were in comparison to the rest of the world. Can you clear that up a little bit?
Well, I did give statistical figures as far as saying that Cuba was the number one world producer in cobalt. Now, cobalt is a mineral that is used, that the Russians are using presently in making rockets,
uh-huh.
And also was the second largest world producer in the nickel, in the mineral nickel.
Yeah, but what about some of the other comparisons? I'm really remembering right now.
What I was trying to say in that comparison was that Cuba wasn't as backward as people like the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, etc., tried to make,
uh-huh.
And that they are in the United Nations statistics, and that if you read these statistics, it'll prove that instead of Castro pushing the nation forwards, what it has done, it has pushed the nation back at least 50 years.
Okay. And you were talking about Castro wearing a bulletproof vest and hat. I really can see how that would be he needs to do it, because at the time JFK was shot, he was probably one of the most loved American people, but he was still shot.
Well, he was also one of the most hated American people.
And even at the height of the hate for Richard Nixon in this country, in which he had very little popularity, President Nixon did not feel like he had to wear a bulletproof hat and vest to run around the country and to see people. On the contrary.
He had, on the average, just about like 40 Secret Service men around him all the time.
Well, not when they're brandishing machine guns out in public.
Yeah.
Okay, does that answer that?
One more thing I'd like to say is the thing about in Miami, I guess it is, of Latin Americanizing certain sections of the city or the country or whatever. In other words, molding parts of America toward Latin Americans that are freed from Cuba, freed from Cuba. Do you have anything to say about that?
Latin Americans and what?
Kind of, you know, like having the schools geared toward the Latin American people in a section of the city.
You mean the Cubans integrating the community?
Yeah.
Well, I myself feel, as many other younger Cubans, as I said in the statement, that this is a voyage to us like Ulysses. I personally don't plan on making this my lifelong place for to stay. I do hope on a return to Cuba, as so does Juan here with me and various other Cubans. I really could care less about whether we make a city here in the United States or not. I believe that because of the strong circumstances and the prejudice, et cetera, that we met when we first came to this country, it's what made the Cubans band together and help themselves out, because if we didn't do it for ourselves, nobody else is going to do it for us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you much.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, don't you tend to think that there is a strong tie between Lee Harvey Oswald, who did advocate fair play for Cuba, and who did assassinate President Kennedy?
Repeat that. Is that a question? I didn't catch that.
I'll say, don't you tend to think there is a tie? In other words, I want your opinion. Do you tend to think there is a tie between Lee Harvey Oswald,
and
who did advocate fair play for Cuba, and who did assassinate Kennedy?
A tie between Lee Harvey and...
Well, the tie is that his reasons for assassination...
Wait a second. You're talking about Lee Harvey Oswald having a tie with what? Is there a tie between Lee Harvey Oswald and what?
Well, we know there is a tie between him and the Fair Play for Cuba.
Right, he was
the organization.
He was the treasurer, right.
Yes.
And?
And we know that he did assassinate President Kennedy.
Well, somebody knows it. Somebody may think they know it. I don't know it.
Well,
we don't know. Who knows?
No.
I don't know.
What does it say in the history books? I mean...
Well, it says George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. Do you believe that?
But I want to try to make that Lee Harvey Oswald.
Okay. There's a reasonably good... we can assume. We'll assume that Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy.
Okay, we can assume that.
Okay.
So we know that Lee Harvey Oswald... 3 months before, was a advocate of Fair Play for Cuba.
He was a member of it and
yes.
Was a spokesman for it.
So don't you think his reasons for assassination or whatever they were related to this organization because of his...
Well, he had a reason. I mean, if he was a member of Fair Play for Cuba Committee and he was anti-Kennedy, yes, he could have a reason. So could Joe Schwartz in Alabama, but it doesn't prove anything. It doesn't really, I mean, there's nothing concrete there. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, I'd like to ask Tony a question.
Yes.
If Cuba was indeed, before the revolution, this flower of South America, then could he explain why there was the revolution in the first place, and or the statement he made that they expected Castro to launch them into number one? And on the other point, if they did have a constitution, you know, on a par with the United States, then why the need for a war to change their government?
Well, I never stated that Cuba was the flower of Latin America. What I tried to present the point was that Cuba progressed greatly in 56 years, and the causes that led to Fidel Castro coming to power was that Cubans got too much freedom. They thought that they had come across great. They thought that they were progressing so fast. They wanted more and more and more, and they thought that by putting Castro into power, by welcoming that revolution, that this would bring it. But obviously, it was a betrayed revolution. When Castro came down from the hills, he brought with him Bibles, rosaries around their necks. They went to the cathedral to pray, and obviously, in an effort to fool the people, he never accomplished, and he never lived up to all the points that he said he would in the Constitution.
Okay, I have one other question for you. Are you willing to go to Cuba and die in the cause of your country? I mean, get right down into the trenches and die.
It's not going to be a matter of getting down into the trenches.
Well, I'm asking you if you're willing to actually go back and fight and die for your country rather than sit here and make speeches.
That's what I'm asking you.
Well, both of us are going to answer that. Myself, I'll answer first, and then Juan wants to answer also.
I
believe that the only way anything's going to be done for Cuba right now is if there is an uprising within the island to overthrow Castro. And yes, I am with a group right now who is prepared. We are militarily trained. I was in the U.S. Army. I know all about how to handle weapons. And we are trained right now for the moment that an uprising occurs in the island to be back, to be right there where we are needed. Yes, and if it takes me dying, well, that's part of life.
Okay, could you tell me what percentage of the refugees do you think, what percentage do you think hold that attitude?
About 20% of it.
So about 20%?
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to mention the fact that, excuse me.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Can I ask Tony a question, please?
Sure.
Tony?
Yes.
Tony?
Yes.
What do you think about going back to Cuba again, but without, arrangement that they are doing? How do you call that in English?
The coexistentialism.
Coexistence?
I don't want that. I don't want it. But I would like to go back to Cuba one day. What do you think? We can go back one day?
Well, I believe that under the present government with Castro, there can be no coexistence.
No, I don't want it.
We cannot go back with coexistence.
No.
I feel that even though that this is what the present United States government attitude is leading to, is a policy of detente and coexistence with this communist regime, I don't believe it'll come about. I believe that the people within Cuba will overthrow Castro eventually, and that us here in the United States must be ready for when this happens to do something about it. What is your opinion, Juan?
Well, I guess my opinion in this case is if you don't feel like you're supposed to go over there through the matter of coexistence, the best thing you can do is try to help everybody, and there is doing some kind of a work to gain the freedom of the Cubans right now. Because what is very important is the people there is in Cuba now, they can talk, they can speak by themselves, they can do nothing because they don't have the necessary help to overthrow the government. This is an international fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the communists got the support of the Soviet Union and all the communist countries in the world. I mean, Castro in this way. And we don't have no support at all. We're doing everything by ourselves. And in the new constitution with Castro got in Cuba now, I'm pretty sure you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be allowed you to go to Cuba unless you're not participating in any kind of activity there against the system. Which is the way they have to know in order to know that you are not doing anything against the communists. This is just a lie, you know. So they don't want us over there. The only way we got to go over there is fighting.
Yeah, no, but that's what I want to know. I want to know do you think some of these days we can go back there again to a free Cuba?
Sure, I'm pretty sure about it.
Yes.
That's my question, you know. Okay.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be over here talking on the radio.
Pardon me?
Otherwise, I wouldn't be over here talking with you on the radio.
Okay, well, I congratulate you both. You are doing a very good job. And I hope and pray that you can go ahead, and one day Cuba be free and we can meet there. Okay?
Thank you. God bless you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, let me once again give the numbers here. The Dade number is 944-2964, and the Broward number is 581-1580. I wanted to ask you, Tony, what exactly are anti-communist Cubans doing as far as organizing in anticipation of a fight with...
Well, unfortunately, Buzz, ever since President Kennedy gave the order that no Cubans were to leave here in the United States in any raids against Cuba, the ones that have been going clandestinely not only face the odds against fighting against Castro, but also the odds of the United States Coast Guard and the U.S. government and the FBI breaking these conspiracies and throwing them under arrest.
Which they have done that in the past.
Continuously. These things are continuously coming up. You read them out in the newspaper. And we're not fighting the United States government. We don't want to do any harm to the American people. All we are asking for is the chance to let us fight ourselves. We have the guns. We have the men. We're not asking for money. We're not asking for the U.S. Marines. All we're asking is just a chance to let us do it ourselves. And this could have been solved a long time ago.
Don't you think what with McGovern going down there and they're now talking of, I mean, they're talking about normalization of relations. I mean, that must be for you a very depressing development as far as the two countries go.
On the contrary, it's made me more tenacious. It shows me who I can trust and who I can work with.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
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 Hi, is Tony there?
Yes.
I've got a question. I just turned the radio off so I can't hear, and I'll try to make it as fast as I can because I know there's probably a lot of other people that want to phone in. I'm from out of this area, and I have different impressions about what I was brought up to believe in Cuba. When Cuba, when the revolution happened, I was very young. I'm only 23 years old, and I was in the Navy for 6 years, and I just got discharged. And many of the men that I worked with in the Navy made cruises and went to Cuba, you know, in 55 and during the early 50s. And they were like my senior leaders, and they used to come up with stories about all the good times that they had in Cuba. And they were talking about what it sounded like to me is exploitation of people. You know, I've heard that Castro said that there will never be another Cuban woman prostituting herself again when he took over power in Cuba. Well, like, I more or less believe from what I was heard from other people that the government was corrupt and that there was definitely a need for a change. And the only way for that change to happen was through a revolution. And the revolution had to happen because the organ, you know, the people that had power were so corrupt.
You said you're Cuban?
Pardon me?
Are you Cuban?
No, I'm American.
Oh. Well, first of all, there is always the myth about what Cuba was, whether it was a gigantic brothel, etc. That is all part of also the communist propaganda that this is what they want to work on. Now, Cuba was no more any of that than it's Las Vegas or Miami Beach. Any area where you're going to find entertainment, of course you're going to find prostitution in any part of the world. The communists, what they've done is they've exploited that. They've exploited how the previous governments were corrupt. I don't feel that there is any government in the world that can say, look, we're clean, we're not corrupt. I think the latest Watergate hearings, etc., have even brought out to the American people, who once upon a time thought that they were the cleanest politic nation in the world, show that everybody is human and that everybody's fallible. And yet, even though there was corruption, as there is everywhere else, it was a government that was elected. You had elections. You don't have that in Cuba now. And it was... as I said, the communists have used all that to exploit the propaganda to give an excuse for them being in power. But all that still exists in Cuba today. There is prostitution. Because if you think that they've wiped it out, there's an old quote saying that's the oldest profession in the world. So it's not so.
Right. Well, you don't think that the Batista government was a police state type government?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
It wasn't.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much. That was a good point you brought on. I thought about Watergate. It definitely related to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
Let me ask you, do you think if Castro himself were eliminated as an individual, how would that affect the entire situation?
Well, that we hope, we won't be the finish of it because Well, no matter who is in the power, which it really is behind is the communist system. Like, and this is a great conspiracy to get places in America, like they tried to do in Chile, or they tried to do it now in Peru, or wherever. So if we get rid of Castro, just Castro, We still got to fight against the communists over there, the people they're going to left behind and everything, and the system. But it will help.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. I just want to tell Tony that why doesn't that specifically mention the fact that unemployment was too high in the island before Castro came to power? Also the fact that the political system was saturated with corruption. Things like that will make people be aware of things that are happening in the island now.
Are you saying that prior to Castro that there was political corruption and that there was unemployment?
Unemployment was tremendously high.
Well, as we just stated before, we talked about political corruption. Now, as far as unemployment, the statistics that I read previously showed that Cuba was the third-ranking nation in Latin America that had achieved this status after only 56 years. And the problems that Cuba had at the time were being solved. Cuba was progressing continuously. It was never falling back.
See, Tony, but you cannot talk about development. What you're talking about is growth. Cuba, the economic power in Cuba was concentrated in very few hands, and the people search didn't have any access to public policy making. That is a fact. And something very important, you have not mentioned about the disparity between the countryside and the city. The fact that people were virtually dying of hunger.
In Cuba, you mean?
Yes, in Cuba, yes.
What, are you a Cuban?
No, I'm not a Cuban. I'm from Venezuela.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, I don't have to go to China to know that they have a communist dictatorship in China.
And the people, you know that the people is dying in China of hunger too?
No, but my point is this. No, but they are much better off than they were.
Well, I mean, if you know that in China the people is dying of hunger.
My point is this. They are much better off than they were before Mao Zedong came to power. And that is a fact. Everybody knows
well,
that.
I mean, if you know so much about history or about a place because you're reading in the newspaper and magazines, etc., then you must know that in some places like in Africa and China and in India, the people is dying of hunger too, isn't it?
Tony, but my point is that...
Well, are you going to answer my question?
Oh, yes, I know that.
Oh, yeah. All right, go ahead.
My point is this. You mentioned about the Constitution of 1940, and everybody knows that this Constitution was never implemented. That was one of the basic principles of the whole Castro movement, to bring back the Constitution to life.
Which is, he never did.
He never did, yeah, no. But there are reasons why he could never do it.
Why?
Because he came to the U.S. about 3 months after he came to power, and Nixon said about him that either he was too naive about communism or he was a communist. What I'm trying to say is that when he came to the U.S., you did not pay any attention to him when he came for help. So he had to turn to somebody else to get his help. That is my point. And that there are a lot of reasons why today Cuba is communist.
Do you think so?
Yes, I
Well, I tell you one thing. Listen, in Cuba right now, and I've been in Cuba, I'm in Cuba, and I've been in Cuba all my life. And in Cuba, when Castro took the power, one of the first things he said was that the black people in that country were suppressing for so many years, so and so. I'm black myself. And he's going to change everything. You know what they did? Well, I tell you. All the old motels there, which were belonging to the American people or American investor or Cuban nationality was money, they closed it up to the whole Cuban population. They give it to the Russians, Hungarians, Czechoslovakians, all those guys that came from the Soviet countries. And the biggest places like Miramar and Country Club and Reparto Coli, all the big places, richest places they used to be before the Castro took the power, they now belong to the Russians. And they got markets, especially supermarkets, where the people of Cuba, they can buy anything over there.
Okay.
Because you have to be a member of the party in order to enjoy the best thing that was the government got over there. And that's the truth. That's the truth. They give you 3.5 pounds of rice for a family. And if you're a Latin guy, you know what the three and a half pounds of rice means for a family of three guys.
Let me make a point. You are black, you said, right?
Yes, I am.
Would you deny that before he came to power, there were many places to which you could not go?
No, that's not true.
let me tell you, you could not go to the Belen College.
Because I was not rich, because I don't have the money for it.
Let me
but not because of my color.
Okay,
I tell you one
thing. There were many schools in Cuba, many clubs, like the Tropicana. There were many private businesses to which you could not go, and that is a fact. Also, let me say this, because there's a lot of misunderstanding.
Well, let me interrupt you. Let me interrupt you for a second. There were a lot of black clubs, too, which the white people never can go over there, neither.
Let me finish before you say that, okay? Now, why don't you say that before Castro came to power, there were many places to which you could not go, not only because you were not rich, but because you were black, and that is a fact. Batista, when he came to power, he bought the yacht club because he was mulatto and he could not go to that place when he was not president. And everybody knows that. In Cuba, you have clubs for blacks, for mulattoes, and for whites.
Right.
And, oh, you don't deny that?
No.
Oh, but then why don't you say that?
No, I mean, I don't deny there were all kind of clubs. If you were a mulatto, you can go to the black club. If you were white, you can go to the black club, neither. But if you were black, you can go to the white club. The club is for a group of persons. They made it by themselves. They don't want you over there, no matter what color you got.
That is not true. The thing is that the division was not based in economics. It was pure race.
Look, you're very swearing.
I wish that you said those things to the people so that they understand more what is taking place in Cuba.
Look, you're Venezuelan. If you want to find out what is going on in Cuba, you can go down there yourself. As a matter of fact, right now they're welcoming you and all your countrymen to go to Cuba. So why don't you go down there, see what's going on, find out what's going on, and then come back and report it.
Okay, before I finish, let me say that I am not communist, because when people talk the way I'm talking now, you people say that they are communists. Let me tell you that I'm not communist. I'm just very aware of what's taking place in Cuba before Castro came to power.
But
I am not communist, okay?
We never called you a communist.
No, but when people talk the way I am now, you refer to them as communists.
Well, let's look at it.
It sure looks like it.
Let's not talk about what we haven't said here. I thank you for the call. It's getting late. We've got to go. We'll talk to you again later,
okay,
all right?
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, let me say that this is WSHE Fort Lauderdale, Miami, WSRF Fort Lauderdale. And it is late. It's past our bedtime. And I want to thank Tony and Juan for coming down here. It's been a heated heated discussion. Next week, I don't know. I can't think about next week. That Shirley Temple Spectacular lurks in the background always. We never know about that. But we'll see about it next week. Thanks again for coming down here.
Thanks to you.
And we will see you again next week.
WSHE, Fort Lauderdale, Miami.
Espacio de orientación completo.